Hello and welcome to the Cloud English Podcast. My name is Luke. It is June 2nd, 2029. It's great to be here. I think we have a lot of interesting things to talk about today. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're having a good week and a fantastic weekend. If you count Friday as the weekend, which I think most people do, although I'm not sure what the sort of cutoff there is. This is a good question. Let me quickly ask what ChatGPT thinks about this. Then we'll get into the sort of top of show stuff. Is Friday considered the weekend generally? I mean, it is, right? Friday is definitely the weekend. Well, let's see what ChatGPT says. ChatGPT says, while Friday is technically still part of the work week, in most traditional schedules, many people consider it to be part of the weekend because it's the last day of work before 2 days off. However, it's more accurate to say the weekend is Saturday and Sunday in a typical Monday to Friday work week. Yes, I guess that's fair. But again, I think if you asked 100 people, so it's saying many people consider Friday the weekend. If you ask many people, I think many people are going to say that Friday is the weekend. But you know what? Since we are also live here, I'm just going to throw up a poll just for fun because I want to see what people think, and they can vote as we go. If we get any interesting results, I'll report that as we go. So let me pop up a quick poll here. How do I phrase this poll? I'm putting this up on YouTube, by the way. For those listening, you can watch on YouTube when we do these, or just carry on listening. Yes, Ice Block, we are alive. Hold on. Let me think about how to phrase this. Because if I just say yes or no, I don't think that quite captures it. Okay, so is Friday the weekend is the question. And then yes, no. And then the third option will be Friday evening is the weekend, but not Friday during work, school. Oh, that's too long. Okay, I just have to put Friday evening as the weekend. Okay, so add that third option. And we'll put that in. Let's see what people say. I'm very curious. Okay, Ice Block, love from China. Hello from China. And Karina's here. And also MAGA, hello. So today we're going to be talking about storytelling and why it's so important for learning English, improving your English, speaking English well. We're going to be going over some of the principles that you need to tell stories well, the pieces, right, in a couple different ways. And we're also going to be going into some useful words and phrases from an episode of a TV show. We've been doing this fairly often, and feel free to submit suggestions as well on that. What else? We're going to be looking at the Duolingo English test. We're going to be actually doing a practice test. So that should be pretty interesting. I'm looking forward to showing you what that looks like. It's actually a pretty accurate test to evaluate your current level of English. So we have that to look forward to if you haven't already done so. And you're watching this on YouTube or Facebook, then you can hit the thumbs up. That really helps the algorithm to say, hey, I like this. Other people would like it too. Subscribe as well. If you're listening to this later and, you know, you're listening to the audio version, as I know many people do, then that's fine. I support that. If you ever have feedback on improving the listening-only experience, please reach out. Please let me know. because it's very important to me that the audio only experience is good, right? So reach out. Let me know if you have any feedback on what I can do to make it better, because I respect and appreciate the listeners only. If you want to join live, though, you can do so every Friday around this time. It's about noon Eastern Standard Time. And so you can join live and ask questions and comment and so on. Or not. Just watch and listen later. That's fine, too. I'm okay with either one, to be honest. Rula from Jordan, hello. Good to see people joining. Fantastic. Love it. Okay. Is there anything else? Well, there's the Discord. If you want to join an English community where you can ask me questions anytime, there's actually a question section. You may do that. That is in the links in the description. You can also get a free English course, Natural English Conversations. And feel free to sign up for the newsletter as well. Just add your email there and I send out notices and highlights and offers and things like that. Iceblock says, I got a job in English through your videos. Wow, that is fantastic. That's unbelievable. Iceblock, what job did you get? I'd love to hear more about that. That's amazing. Now, actually, I do want to just share one thing quickly. This is a new course that I recently launched. And it's a pretty new category for me. Right now, it is only on Udemy. So if you just go to Udemy and you search Luke Pretty, Lukeprddy, you will find my courses there. Let me show you what I'm looking at here. And you'll see all of my courses. Most of these are English learning related. But if you go to the third page here, there is a new course. And the course is called Great Writing with ChatGPT, a complete hands-on guide. Now, this course, it is not free, but it's also fairly affordable, and you can probably find a coupon or something to get it for even lower. But it's 4.5 hours, basically to show you step by step, with three different approaches and lots of examples, how to write well with ChatGPT for business purposes, for work-related stuff like emails, proposals, to organize information in writing like meeting notes, to write things like resumes and cover letters. Iceblock, you probably could have used that in your process, right? So I feel very confident in the quality of this course. I think there isn't a lot of stuff like this in terms of how do you actually get good quality writing. It's very easy to just go into ChatGPT and get something generic, blah, like just write something for me. But to get really good writing is not easy. We already have 105 students in the course, which is fantastic. It's already got 10 ratings, all 5 stars. So pick this up. I can't offer it to you for free, but I can say that it's reasonably priced, and I am confident that it is definitely worth the investment. And why am I moving around like this? Okay, so that's that. Enough of that. No more of that. Let's get into the main docket here. Hi, everyone from Argentina. Hand pink waving is what I see there. So I'm assuming that's just it's so weird when you're messaging between platforms or there's some sort of incompatibility between the device you're using and the other person's device or the other platform that you're trying to message on. So for example, with iMessage, if I'm texting with people who use, for example, Android, then it's often going to show me, it's often going to show me if, for example, someone clicked love something or like something, it spells it out. This person loved your video or loved your photo if I'm just messaging with people I know. But actually, you know, they clicked some kind of emoji and it just doesn't translate correctly. These are the problems we face in the 21st century. The second decade of the 21st century, and I think we'll get there, but it's amazing that we still have these problems. It's so silly. Yeah, so Sebastian, what I see is you probably have some emojis there because I see colon, hand, hyphen, pink, hyphen, waving, colon, colon, hand, hyphen, pink, hyphen, waving, colon, love. That can't be what you actually wrote. It's not possible. It's not possible. Anyway. Visal says, I came here after a long time. Welcome back. Okay. It's good to see you. Good to see you, everybody. Good to see you. Okay, we have some votes on the poll here. Wow, it's surprising. No, it's actually not that surprising. So far, we've got 31% saying, yes, Friday is the weekend. We've got 31% saying, no, Friday is not the weekend. So it's tied there. But then we have a shocking 38%, which is not shocking at all, saying that Friday evening is the weekend. And that's actually what I think a lot of people feel, is that it's kind of in this weird limbo state. It's the weekend, but only after work is finished is it the weekend, right? If it's Friday morning, it's not the weekend. Friday at 5 p.m., that's the weekend, right? Iceblock said, I almost let ChatGPT write my emails now. I'm a salary thief. Yeah, just be careful with company information, right? You can get in big trouble there. If you put private company information into your emails or into even doing work-related stuff, you've got to be really careful with that because they're, depending on the industry you work in, things that are not supposed to be out there. But if you put a request into ChatGPT, it's on their servers, right? So OpenAI's servers, so you never know. Hello, Luke Swadi Krub? Sawadi Krub? Sawadi krub. Sawadi krub. Ah, you must be from Thailand. What does krub mean, though? I know, for example, sawadi ka and sawadi kap is, I know what that means, but krub, K-R-U-B, I'm not sure what that means. Yes, I will change the important information. Okay, that's a good strategy. Yeah, so you do a replace keywords and then do the emails and then, yeah. But again, I would highly recommend checking out that course if you're a professional working, because the difference between write an email about something and a really finely tuned email that it feels exactly like you actually write, that is a very wide gap, huge margin. And I think that's where the sort of value in something like a course comes in, is learning the steps to get to really, really high quality writing, right? All right. Well, those watching live, if you have any big questions throughout, we'll get to that. We're going to be going through some topics today on the docket. But yes, I will be checking questions and comments as we go along. So today we're going to be talking about storytelling. So let's get into that. I feel that storytelling, stories, are not really as appreciated as they should be when it comes to learning English, using English, speaking English well. Being able to tell a good story, being able to communicate information in a way that changes someone's mind, makes them feel something. This is what being human is all about. And for some reason, it doesn't really seem to be the big priority. It's more often with, for example, English language stuff, it's more about, you know, writing a proposal, which is great. right? Or, which is a story, a kind of story, I suppose, but very specific use cases. I believe that if you can tell a good story, you can do many other things well. If you know sort of the principles behind storytelling, you know how to build a story, and you have the English skills to express yourself well. Right now, what are we saying a story is? Is this a thing happened to me last week? Well, it could be. But a story could also be a great idea that you have and how you see that idea changing the world. A story could be an important thing that you learned or are currently learning. A story could be making someone understand some difficulty that you are going through or have gone through, right? So we're telling stories all the time, but I think thinking of the ways that we communicate as stories as much as we can is actually a useful way to think about language, because then we're not just thinking about the technical parts. We're thinking about how can I use language to influence? How can I use language to affect others? How can I use language to convince others, right? So that's what I want to talk about a little bit. Number one, what do we need stories for in regards to language learning, and what are the specific things we can do to improve our storytelling skills in English? Okay? So let's talk about that a bit. I think if we're defining it as sort of conveying events in words and sounds, right? Expressing things not by script, but face-to-face or with others, getting ideas across. Then the next thing to talk about maybe is why stories are significant in how we communicate with others, right? Stories have been a part of human culture since, forever, right? In ancient times, some of the earliest things that we hear, for example, from the Sumerian civilization are their stories. The Epic of Gilgamesh, right, is one of the earliest stories on record. And why is that? Why is it a story that we get rather than, I don't know, anything else, right? It's a story because stories are containers. They contain values. They contain important symbols, right? They're containers of meaning. And because they're expressed or organized in a way that grabs our emotions, in a way that we can remember, right? Stories kind of stick, right? Stories grab hold of people. When people hear a really good story, they remember that. And because they remember the story, they remember the things inside of the story, the specific details. So they can be a great way to make people remember things. Stories can be a mnemonic device. It's kind of like a micro story to help you remember something, right? So they have great cultural significance and historical significance, right? But also I think they're a fundamental tool, basic tool for communication and learning, right? If you learn something, for example, English related, inside of a story, how much more likely are you to remember that, right? So stories are a great way to commit things to memory. The Mind Palace technique, or the Memory Palace technique, or the, it's also called the Loci method of remembering things, which is very powerful, is based on stories. So if you want to remember the random order of 52 cards, or you want to remember a 10,000 digit number, what you do is create these little memorable objects and place them in a story in your mind that allow you then to remember every single number or every single card or a lot of other things too. It's a very powerful memory technique? Well, it's based on stories because the whole story itself kind of makes sense. The story is what holds it all together, right? But now what about specifically language learning? What is the role of storytelling when we're learning English, right? So maybe we can start with the pieces that we need to express a complex idea. So if you just learned the English language, you might know some nouns and you might know some verbs, maybe run and jump and talk and apple and banana and tree. Okay. Can you express complicated ideas with basically just that? It might be a little bit difficult, right? As you increase in skill and knowledge of the language, you then gain the ability to put together more pieces to express more complicated things, right? So those complicated things fit together and can create a story. So to be able to express how we felt when something happened to us, to be able to talk about something that we want to happen, to convince somebody of something, right? You need to have some basics, and then you need to build on those basics and sort of put the basics together. And then you need to put those things together to make even bigger pieces. And once you get up to a certain level, then you can really start expressing a lot of things. And so it's in a way kind of a challenge to you to get to a certain level. To be able to tell a good story is to be able to get a bunch of complex ideas and fit them together in a natural way that other people would like to listen to. Okay, so what do I need to be able to do that? How much language do I need? How good do I need to be at using the English language, right? So you can use how good are my storytelling skills almost as a subjective way to measure your English fluency, your knowledge of English, your ability to use the language, right? And it's not just knowledge, by the way. I said use the language and your knowledge of the language. Because if you know a bunch, that doesn't mean you're a good storyteller. You have to be able to use all of those things you know in order to tell a good story, right? So then you go to the next level, which is, okay, I can tell a pretty good story. I can talk about my vacation that I took 6 months ago, but I like to make it even more impactful, even more interesting. Now you have to challenge yourself to broaden your vocabulary, to learn more specific words that can get those ideas across very well, right? Those very, very specific words. So that's a challenge to you to continue to learn. Right? So number one, being able to communicate in a story is a way to measure, okay, where am I? Am I making progress? Can I use the language? And then number two, this driver, this thing kind of pushing you to, I need to learn these new words and phrases so that I'm able to express my ideas better. And I'm using stories very loosely here. I don't just mean a thing that happened last Tuesday. I mean, what we talked about, a thing that could happen, a thing that I believe, a thing I want you to understand, right? This is all storytelling skills, right? But also, going the other way, being able to listen to a story and understand it and enjoy it is challenging your listening skills, right? It's challenging your ability to comprehend the subtleties of what someone else is saying, or perhaps writing, right? So it goes in both directions. You're challenging yourself to be able to put complicated ideas together and continue to hone and learn to get better at expressing your ideas. And when you hear other people's stories, you're pushing yourself to pick up new things from others, from the way that they express themselves, how they use intonation, to improving basic listening skills. I didn't catch that part, but maybe the next time you hear it, I was able to understand everything that you said, right? So storytelling is sort of the center skill that can improve and push you to improve as a communicator, but also as someone connecting with others as a listener, right? And you'll pick up words and phrases from that as well. And I think it's also important to mention that because stories are entertaining, interesting, right? We like to listen to stories. It's usually not a pain to listen to a story. That is what language is for. And sometimes when we're learning in a very technical way, grammar books and this word goes with this word and this should be the past tense, all of that stuff, which is good, can force us to lose sight of what is really important, and that language and using language ultimately is for communication and should be therefore interesting and engaging and enjoyable, not painful. So if you ever feel like you're getting lost in all of the exercises in the grammar books and all that stuff, maybe change directions or at least start looking at it a different way. How well can I express myself? Am I challenging myself to get better at that? Am I engaging with others? Am I learning from others, right? So try to enjoy the process. And I think when you're engaging with stories, either telling them or listening to them, you are doing that better, right? If we can miss the forest for the trees would be the technical parts, and the forest would be storytelling, communicating with others, engaging with others, okay? So now let's talk about a couple of specific practical tips for actually getting better at telling stories, right? Challenge yourself to, when you're explaining something, when you need to give a proposal, when you need to get ideas across, let's say, challenge yourself to think of that as a story, and then to incorporate specific new words and phrases into that story. So you always want to be pushing yourself if you're going to get better at English, right? So, okay, I learned these 5 new words recently. When I'm doing my proposal this week for my team, or when I'm talking in my book club or whatever I'm doing, I'm going to try to bring in these 5 words that I've learned recently, these 5 new phrases that I've learned. And the reason that you should do that is if you're not challenging yourself to use what you learn, then it's likely to be lost and you're never really going to feel comfortable with that. So then why did you learn it, right? So anytime you have a chance to communicate or speak for longer than a couple minutes, right, longer than a minute, use that as a chance to pull in some of the things that you're learning, put it into practice, right? So it's sort of a challenge mechanism, right? An application mechanism. Now, what about comprehension, right? What different levels of things can you understand? If you can answer abstract questions about a story or about an article, then maybe you understand it pretty well. But how do you know that? My suggestion would be this. If you have an article that you've read and that's a story, generate from, let's say, ChatGPT, generate a set of 10 open questions about that story or that article, and then try your best to answer those. If you want to test your understanding specifically, then make those knowledge questions, right? And you can, again, get those from ChatGPT. Just paste it in and say, give me 10 comprehension questions about this article, this story, this chapter of this book. If it's a chapter of a book, great. You're testing your comprehension. If it's a video, for example, one of my videos or an interesting video that you've seen and you want to see if you understand it, then get the transcript from the video, paste that into ChatGPT, get, again, 10 questions, ask for comprehension questions, ask for open questions, whatever you want to check for, right? And then see how well you can answer those. So you're checking your comprehension, right? Now, what about putting the pieces together? We talked about complex ideas. What about putting those pieces together? Because complex ideas put together are what make up or what can make up a story, right? I think it's important to practice this. This is where repetition and practice and getting comfortable comes in. It's unlikely that you're going to get good at something when you do it once every 4 months. So you want to do it on a regular basis. This would be talking about what happened last week, something interesting you learned last week, a challenge you overcame last week, a bizarre thing that you experienced or thought about and why that happened. These are all, by the way, stories. And just record yourself talking through those. And as painful as it might be, go back and rewatch that and give yourself feedback. If you have friends you can talk to and share those with, great. Those opportunities can be few and far between. But at least record yourself. Do it regularly. Do it twice a week. If you instead you want to talk about, I don't know, your favorite products that came out this week, then do that. Start a YouTube channel. I always recommend people just start one, even if you don't have any viewers. Just do it because it's going to challenge you to consistently practice putting those complex ideas together. And the more you do that, the more comfortable you get with it. You start picking up little things. If you're watching back what you did, then you start noticing things. If you're putting it on YouTube, then you start getting comments. And this all leads to this feedback process of getting better, pushing yourself. And consistency is very, very important there, right? But don't forget writing as well, right? Writing is a powerful tool. You should practice writing too. Putting your ideas down in writing, you can go back and read through them and refine what you wrote, right? So keep a diary. There are many other benefits to keeping a diary, but one being, right, you can capture your current state, how you feel, what you're thinking about, and you're practicing again, putting together those complex ideas using language, right? Using language. Okay, so those are just a few things to keep in mind. And again, this is one of our most ancient human practices, storytelling, i.e. putting our complex ideas together in natural, compelling, hopefully comprehensive ways that make people feel something or communicate something. And so if you start looking at yourself as a storyteller, if you start thinking of yourself in that way, as you're improving your English, then you don't get bogged down in the technical stuff. You become a communicator, and you remember that language is for communication, right? And also you make more connections. You engage with others more, whether you're listening to stories or telling them. So there's so many benefits. And again, it's a great way to evaluate your progress. How much am I able to express naturally? How do I feel when I'm doing that? Could I be using more interesting, nuanced words and phrases? Can I understand every word of that story that I'm hearing? So many positive things, so many benefits. And so I hope you can start challenging yourself in this way if you haven't already done so. If you have any questions, let me know. If you haven't already done so, don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe. And also, check out my free course, Natural English Conversations, in the links in the description. Okay. All right. My first message was sent. Iceblock says, funny thing, when I was looking for this service desk job, they interviewed me for my speaking skills, but after I joined, I found out that last time we had a customer call was 2 years ago. Wow. Crazy. Alejandro says, weekend, I think. First, we should establish what is a week, right? That's a valid point. That's a valid point. What is the week? So you're saying weekend is only Sunday at midnight or 11:59 p.m. Krub, K-R-U-B, is greeting formal speak for men in a polite way. Got it, in Thai. Ah, that's very interesting. Greetings from Chile, hello. Alejandro says, soda writing is a skill you need to develop as well as talking. Do you mean so, right? Yeah, so, I mean, yes, I think people should work on their writing skills as well. Hello, Omar. They haven't noticed that you're speaking as a beginner. Well, we all start somewhere, right? I think, as I just talked about, speaking skills, we often forget what it's all for, but we really just need to communicate with other human beings. And if you can do that well, then you can accomplish a lot, and it's amazing. But if you struggle, it can be so frustrating to not be able to get your ideas out. That can motivate you, hopefully, to push yourself, to learn new sentence phrases, sentence types, right? Sentence patterns, all of those things that can make you better at expressing your ideas. It's so frustrating to not be able to express ideas. And personally, I find it frustrating when other people don't know how to express their ideas. Now, not including English learners, I say. If you're not a native English speaker, for me, you get a pass. That means I have a lot of friends who are not native English speakers. And I'm impressed if someone is speaking my language and it's not their native language. I think that's amazing, first of all, without any other qualifiers. That's great. So I don't have any expectations of, oh, you should be better at it, right? You're speaking it, great. That's already great. I'm satisfied. And so I actually enjoy the challenge of helping people maybe refine those things if that's what they want, right? To express themselves better, again, if that's what they want to do. But also trying to understand broken English is a challenge for me to put those missing pieces together. That's great. So I think what I often get is many non-native English speakers feeling like bad because they think I'm judging them because I am a native speaker and I'm an English teacher. And, you know, but I'm really not. I really don't care. But I do judge native English speakers who don't communicate well. That's what I do. So if someone is a native English speaker and they don't put their words together well and they can't speak cohesively about a topic, they don't know how to express their ideas clearly, I'm full of judgment. Full of judgment. I'm very, very judgmental about that. Why? I think everyone has a responsibility as a sentient human being to learn their native language to the point where they can articulately express their thoughts out loud to others. I believe that is everyone's responsibility. I don't think it's everyone's responsibility to do that in two languages, but to be able to do it in your native language is important. I think it's a basic human skill. and so many native English speakers cannot.
And they just I don't know. I mean,
they sound dumb, and I don't like it. But you don't sound dumb if you're not a native English speaker and you're not expressing yourself well. Why? Because it's your second language. Again, the fact that you're speaking it is amazing. Hi, how are you? I can understand English and I can speak alone, but when I want to talk to other people, I don't talk fluently. What can I do for this? I think Habiber, if that's correct. I think the key thing is consistent practice, as I was just talking about. As painful as it might be to record yourself on video talking about something, telling a story, 3 times a week, watching that recording, looking at yourself, giving yourself some feedback, that simulates talking with other people because it puts you under some pressure. It is not exactly the same, but it does simulate it pretty well. And the other person you're talking to is yourself in the future watching the recording. That process puts you under similar pressure to the pressure you're under when you're talking with others in English. And so you're going to gain similar skills that then you can apply to those in-person conversations with others. And if you practice that consistently 3 to 5 times a week, there is no way that you're not going to get better. No way. In China, you can impress us as a foreigner just by saying, ni hao. Yeah, it's, you know, when I lived in China, and I lived in China I have lived in China for 5 years. And when I moved to China, I didn't speak a single word of Chinese. I was shocked by how willing people were to say I was doing a great job. I would just, once I learned to count to 10 and, you know, say the basic things in Chinese, people would say, oh, wow, it's so natural. And I would always think, no, I mean, I suck. What are you talking about? You should tell me I'm not good enough, and that will motivate me more. Don't say I'm doing a good job. Anyway. We're going to learn some words and phrases from a TV show. We're going to be looking at a scene from The Queen, and we're going to learn some words and phrases from that. So look forward to it. Maybe I should share this. So today, I haven't really been talking much about it, but my wife and I are going to have a son. Probably in July. That's the due date is July. And this would be our first child. And today, we went to do an ultrasound. That is when you get to take a look at the baby. So, I'm just going to share. I'm going to make sure that I crop this and I'm not showing any of the medical details here. Some numbers on here, but there you go. It's not super clear, but you get a little baby face there, a little nose, a little mouth. That's a 3D image. Pretty cool, I think. Pretty cool. Yes, we have picked a name as well. I think I'll hold off on that. I will say I don't want to say it's final until it's actually final. I will say we've picked an unusual name. Really, you think it looks like me? I think it looks more like mushroom. I think maybe a little bit, because I have very deep eyes. My eyes are sort of kind of deep in my head, so that's why I look like I always have very dark eye bags. One reason is because I actually do, but he's got kind of deep eyes, I think. Yeah. Anyway, but I don't think he has my nose. I don't know if you can tell from, there's still 2 months to go, but I think he's got my wife's nose. Yeah, I think he looks more like Mushroom personally. If you don't know who Mushroom is, you can go watch some other of the live streams. Oh, what about the audio listeners? I'm sorry, listeners. Sorry about that. You can't see it, but you have to go find the video version of it. All right. So yeah, I don't want to say the name until we have absolutely confirmed it. I will say it's an unusual name. Very unusual. I've never seen any other human being named this. So that's unusual. It could be nice if your son learning both languages from scratch. Absolutely, that is the plan. So, and there's a lot of science to back this up. The question is, can babies learn two languages natively from birth? Would they be at a developmental disadvantage if they did that? And the science is quite clear. The scientists know there are no disadvantages. There might be some apparent disadvantages early on, but in the long run, absolutely not. In fact, there's pretty clear evidence that there are advantages to being able to natively speak two languages from birth. So my first language is English, and so I will be responsible for that when my son is born. Talking a lot, naming things, explaining what I'm doing, right? There's in a book I'm reading right now, it's called The Sportscaster Way of Talking. Everything you do, you say out loud. I'm moving you here. I'm doing this. I'm changing your diaper, that sort of thing, right? You say everything as a way to develop language skills and tell stories. Then my wife, who speaks Chinese natively, she will speak Chinese all the time. And so from birth, he will grow up learning two separate things. Now, what identifies a language phonetically, because babies are not looking at dictionaries like, I'll translate this from baby to English and figure out what this means. They're learning from scratch, from sound, and the thumbprint of the language is its phonemes. Each language has its own fingerprint or thumbprint, and that is its phonetic thumbprint. English has 44, Chinese has less, but I don't know how many, I can't remember. But Chinese also has intonation, four main tones in, for example, Mandarin, standard Mandarin Chinese. So there are a lot of things to pick up, but those are also differentiators that label it as two separate things. And so they grow up learning all of the words and they never get confused. They know what's Chinese and what's English. There's no confusion. So confusion is not an issue. And again, this has been pretty thoroughly scientifically established. Where you see some apparent disadvantages would be when the baby is a certain age, and let's say they know 20 words, they might know 10 words in English and 10 in Chinese. So it could look like, if you're saying, how's their English development? Maybe another baby the same age, child the same age, knows 20 words. And so you'd say, oh, my child only knows 10. He's behind. Oh, no. Okay, but that's a short-term disadvantage in one language. Actually, they know 20, but they know it in two languages, right? And so, and in the long term, they'll learn all of the vocabulary. It's not a long-term disadvantage. It's a short-term thing. So that's why my wife and I are going to be teaching two languages from birth, and we're going to separate it clearly into I speak English, she speaks Chinese, very clearly, for things we need to talk about together. That will be in English, and we'll see how it goes. I'll keep you posted. I'm really interested to see how it's going to work out. Well, me and my wife, says Amar, speak three languages fluently. I want my kids to speak at least six languages. So you and your wife each speak three different languages fluently? That's interesting. Babies absorb languages like a sponge. Absolutely right. Iceblock suggests the name Ben Skywalker. That's not bad. My name is Luke, and I've been many, many times called Luke Skywalker. But actually, I was named after the Luke in the Bible because I was raised as a Christian boy. I was named after the Luke in the Bible, but growing up, a lot of people said, oh, Luke Skywalker, thinking that they're the first person who ever said it. Idiots. Of course not. People know the most common reaction when I was growing up would be, I'm your father, you know, because of Star Wars. Good afternoon, Luck. My doubt is the following. How can we be fluent when I speak English? My great point weak. Greetings from Colombia. Well, that's a totally common thing, but it's not a doubt. I mean, that's the core issue, right? Fluency requires the correct practice, consistency, work, contact with the language, right? Immersion. So I can't give you an answer in 2 minutes. I mean, I've made entire courses about this that are 15 hours long. So I can't give you a 5-minute answer. But I can say that there isn't a little trick that's going to get you there in 6 months. It's like hard work every day, and you can make significant progress in 6 months. You can. I believe someone could go from, with the right approach, I believe someone could go from poor English to good English in 3 to 6 months, no problem. However, most people are not willing to do what it takes, which is intense work, but not only hard work, because you can put in 6 months of dumb work, but learning 500 words every day, and that's a terrible idea. The part of the work is also in your mind, developing self-awareness, habits, changing your mindset, becoming a sponge of the language, learning the cultural background of the language. It's not just about working hard, studying, right? You need to learn grammar, you need to learn sentence patterns, you need to learn vocabulary and phrases and all that. Great, but that is only about 30% of what gets you to fluency. What gets you to fluency is insane amounts of hard work on all the other things. Uprooting bad habits, replacing them with good habits, the deep self-awareness, almost frightening level of self-awareness required to notice the things that are going on, that are coming out of your mouth, right? And to notice what other people say and how they say it. It's possible. Most people can't get there, though. Very hard. Very, very hard. I would say it's very hard to become fluent in English. It's extremely hard. And only a few people get there. Because only a few people do it the right way. That's the truth. Oh, you speak the same three languages. I have one over her. Okay, so 3 plus 3... if they're the same three, does not equal 6, equals 3 still. Really, I miss your point there, Amar. Iceblock says, From poor English to shiny poor English. I like that phrase, shiny poor English. Somehow I like that. That's nice. If a child knows 20 words in one language and there's another who knows only 10 in two languages, I think the latter deserves more merit. Yeah. 10 each in one of each language. I totally agree. I mean, that's a overly simplistic statement about it. But yeah, that's right. That's how it works. Dream your dream. Is it grammatically correct to use parentheses in this sentence or a square bracket? Square brackets are pretty much never correct for language stuff. Square brackets tend to be formatting for documents in specific cases where usually there's something technical going on, right? Then there are square brackets used in other technical cases. Natural language writing doesn't use square brackets. Does not. Oh, I see. Well, Amar says, I know, Luke, I meant they will learn three languages from us and three more languages as they grow up. Well, that's not a foregone conclusion, okay? I thought you were just using faulty logic there, Amar. Now I get it. Now I understand. Now I see. All right, we're going to go on to the TV show after I have a sip of coffee. This week, I have two coffee machines. I have one. I have an espresso machine, which is great. I make a coffee with that every morning. See you later, Amar. Thanks for joining. And for 6 years, I had a Keurig, which was okay, but the coffee was kind of watery. This week, I got a Nescafe. Nespresso. Not Nescafe. What's that? Nescafe is the powder. Nespresso machine. And it's good coffee, but the foam on top is not like espresso foam. It's got too much air in it, and so after about 30 seconds, it starts to collapse, and then the texture gets weird, and I don't like it. So I like the coffee, but I have to spoon off all of the sort of frothy stuff that comes out. It's odd. It's very odd. So I'm not sure how I feel about it. It's cool. It's a cool machine. Tastes better than Keurig. But the collapsing foam does not do it for me. Tony says, so is it possible to use parentheses in that sentence? Dream your dream. Dream bigger. Yeah, but you need to use both parentheses. I mean, you need a space in front of the first one, and then you need to use one on each side. Okay. All right, let's get into our TV show. We're going to be looking at a scene from The Queen, 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 a scene from The Queen. And doesn't matter if you haven't seen the show. We're just going to be learning a few useful words and phrases from the show. So listen carefully. Turn on your ears. We're going to be picking out these from context, right? So you have to pay careful attention. Try to fit them into the overall context and guess the meaning. And if you want to practice, you can try to make your own sentences using that word or phrase. And also think about using ChatGPT to try it out. You could ask for a few example sentences and then ask ChatGPT if they're correct, right? Get example sentences or provide example sentences. You can do both. You can practice both with ChatGPT. Okay. So listen carefully.
I should mention I was several places along the table.
All right. I think the volume is a little low, so I'm turning it up all the way. Let's crank it.
It's possible that I misheard. Was that she found Buckingham Palace second-rate, dilapidated, and sad, like a neglected provincial hotel.
Okay. What's going on? My cat is meow, making weird noises. I think she's sleeping and having a strange dream. I'm hearing like a...
was that she found Buckingham Palace second-rate, dilapidated, and sad.
Okay, so we've got two interesting words here. Second-rate, dilapidated, and sad. So we're going to look at second-rate, and you're also going to hear dilapidated, neglected. Okay, so we're going to look at both of these. Listen carefully one more time.
Was that she found Buckingham Palace.
Buckingham Palace is where is the traditional home of the British royal family, Buckingham Palace. You probably know that. Why do I need to tell you that? Okay, not salad.
Was that she found Buckingham Palace second rate, dilapidated, and sad.
So the last word there is sad, not salad. Second rate, dilapidated, and again, we're going to look at neglected too. So if something is second rate, it's not close to the best. It's below average, perhaps. If you want to not insult something, but say that the quality isn't great, you say it's kind of second rate. We often use second rate when we want to comment on something being not as good as another thing, sort of a second-rate app. That means there are other apps that are similar that are way better, and so it's not in that category. It's sort of a secondary category of so-so apps, right? Well, Buckingham Palace is, maybe compared to other palaces, I don't know, but compared to maybe their expectations of what great would be, Buckingham Palace's second rate.
And Buckingham Palace, second rate, dilapidated and sad.
Okay, now we have dilapidated. And dilapidated means broken down. It is falling apart. It is collapsing. Now, you would use this for usually physical things. So would you say that your heart is dilapidated or something like that? That's a bit odd to say that your mind is dilapidated. Some people might say that Joe Biden's mind is dilapidated. And usually people are going to choose other words. So for physical structures, it's very common to use dilapidated rather than for personal things, personalities, character traits. Right, often we're describing something physical or the state of something, the state of a city. The downtown area of San Francisco is deeply dilapidated and neglected. Neglected means that it's dilapidated because no one is maintaining it, because no one is paying attention to it, because no one is putting the effort in to make sure it isn't dilapidated. Dilapidatedness, that's not a word, happens over time. Due to neglect. So you could say that neglect causes dilapidation, particularly if we're talking about physical spaces, buildings, houses, living rooms, shacks, shanties, downtown areas, whole countries perhaps, and sometimes other things. I've heard an economy described as dilapidated. It's just less common than talking about someone's backyard or someone's house.
Like a neglected provincial hotel.
Yeah, okay. A neglected provincial hotel. So neglected being the cause of the dilapidation. Neglected, again, just means you're not paying attention to it. You're not really caring about it. Okay? That's a good screen grab there.
One came away with a sense of a tired institution.
Listen to came away with.
Yeah, and that one came away with a sense of hotel. Yeah, and that one came away with a sense of a tired institution.
One came away with a sense of a tired institution. Now, why are they saying one instead of he or she? Well, one is a somewhat formal sounding impersonal pronoun. It's a pronoun used to replace a person, but instead of saying they or you, There's something called the impersonal you, right? If you want to be successful, you need to. Now, I might be talking to you, the personal you, or I might be using you impersonally to talk about anyone who fits the description of someone who wants to, right? So the you there is the impersonal you. Well, one is another impersonal you if one wants to, except we don't use one as often as you or sometimes they, because you, right, if they want to do something, they should. One sounds formal. It often feels too formal, and so a lot of people aren't comfortable using it on a regular basis because of that feeling of formality that comes with it, if one wants to. One comes away with. So if you come away with something, you could have something physical, yes, but you could also come away with an impression, a feeling. I came away from that meeting with a sense of optimism. I came away from that event, or I came away with this feeling of doom that we're all going to be living in a AI-fueled dystopia within the next 5 years. Well, okay, what did you come away with? It could be your insights, your impression, your feeling, right? Usually when you experience something, you experience an event, a place, a meeting. Anytime you have an experience somewhere and you want to describe your impression from that, your learning from that, right? I came away with, for example, a course. Luke, your ChatGPT writing course was really great. I came away with a lot of powerful prompts and great insights about how to use ChatGPT to create great writing. I came away with those things, right? Okay, so that's how we're usually using it.
And that one came away with a sense of a tired institution.
A tired institution. And an institution here is, you could have an institution that is like an academy or a university, right? Or a sort of very large organization that is responsible or working on a specific thing. But an institution in this case being a structure in society. This institution being the royal family, which was very different maybe 500 years ago or 300 years ago, where kings and queens actually had real power. And the King of England was a very powerful person who could do a lot of things and make decisions. And now one comes away with the feeling that the institution of the monarchy, of the royal family of England, the what are they called? The I'm blanking on the word. What are they? Windsor? What is the word? I'm blanking on the word. But that would be the institution of the royal family of the UK, right? And if it's a tired institution, they're sort of irrelevant. They're bogged down by traditions. It's kind of meaningless. What's the point? People are asking that question. What is the point of the royal family, right? Okay, we're going to be looking at overheard next, so let's keep going.
Without a place in the modern world.
I see. And did she have anything to say about me, Patrick?
Did she have anything to say about me?
I was at the other end of the table.
He doesn't want to say it because I think they have a close relationship. So he has to share negative feedback with someone that he doesn't want to share negative feedback with. By the way, when I was watching this, this is what I noticed. This is a guy on Saturday Night Live who looks exactly like this guy, and I thought it was him, but it's not.
But the words I think I overheard were...
The words I think I overheard were.
But the words I think I overheard were.
So if you overhear something, you maybe weren't the intended target of those words. You're not the intended recipient of those words. You're overhearing those words. They're not meant for you, but other people are talking over there, and I caught something. So I overheard your conversation. I overheard that you were talking about. I happened to overhear what you were saying about. Then maybe you would interject. You would mention something, or when you're talking about it later, as I was walking, I overheard two people talking about, and then explain what that was. But again, if you say overheard, that means you weren't the one that was supposed to hear it. It wasn't for you. The words I think I overheard were,
but in our head of state, we had.
Head of state. It's like the head of the country.
A middle-aged woman, so incurious, unintelligent, and unremarkable.
Unremarkable. So let's listen to this one next.
Unintelligent and unremarkable. But Britain's new reduced place in the world, intelligent and unremarkable.
Unremarkable, unintelligent. So what's the difference between unintelligent and unremarkable? Well, they are a little different, right? Because you could be remarkable and unintelligent. A remarkable person would be someone who's very interesting, who's impressive in some specific way. But it doesn't say in specifically what way. Maybe very interesting. Maybe a very good artist, right? Maybe an amazing dancer. Exceptional, extraordinary. Those are similar words to remarkable. Unremarkable is basically very plain, completely uninteresting, nothing special going on. Basically a zero in terms of what do you remember about that person? Nothing. Very unremarkable. So it's in some ways it is an insult, right? But sometimes we use unremarkable if we're talking about nothing bad happened. If something bad could go wrong and it doesn't, it was a pretty unremarkable Tuesday afternoon. That's not necessarily an insult. That's not saying anything bad about Tuesday afternoon. It was a relatively unremarkable Tuesday afternoon means nothing bad happened. Oh, that's good. I was just trying to avoid bad things. I thought something could go wrong, but unfortunately, it was a relatively unremarkable Tuesday afternoon. Oh, nice. But if you're an unremarkable person, in this case, it is an insult. Like, boring, dumb. I'm not saying this about the Queen. Please don't come after me on that. I don't know. But that's what he overheard, right? Liz is unremarkable, apparently.
Unintelligent and unremarkable.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Queen's English. This is sort of formal Southern English. This is a Southern accent.
But Britain's new reduced place in the world was not a surprise, but an
new reduced place in the world, by the way.
Inevitability, urgent, and unremarkable. But Britain's new reduced place in the world was not a surprise, but an inevitability.
Britain's new reduced place in the world was not a surprise, but an inevitability. An inevitability, what is that? An inevitability is something that was bound to happen or is bound to happen. It's not something you can avoid. We don't know maybe when it's going to happen. That's why we say it's an inevitability. It's an inevitability. Say that 10 times fast. An inevitability, an inevitability, an inevitability. That's tough. This is something that will happen. Not avoidable, but we're not specifying when. That's the key, right? There's a certainty about it. It's like there's a rock rolling down a hill, and man, that's not such a great example. There's a rock sitting on a cliff, and every year the cliff sinks a little bit under the weight of the rock. So it's an inevitability that the rock will eventually fall. It's an inevitability. Adjective form, inevitable. It's inevitable. The rock is going to fall. When? I don't know. 5 years, 10 years, 100 years? I don't know when it's going to happen, right? It's inevitable that the British Empire was going to have a reduced place in the world. It used to be this powerful empire. The sun never set on the British Empire. Well, now, after World War II, it has a reduced place in the world. I believe this is happening after World War II. That's the idea.
Reduced place in the world was not a surprise, but an inevitability.
Sorry, Queen. Hard to hear. She does not like to hear that. But anyway, so we talked about second rate. We talked about dilapidated. We talked about neglected or neglect. We talked about coming away with something, right? We talked about overhearing something. Overhearing. We talked about an institution, right? And unremarkable and inevitability or inevitable, okay? Try to use these in sentences. That's the only way that you can actually remember them. Try to, next time you're talking about something, see if you can include them in a natural way. Give it a try. If you have any questions, let me know. If you haven't already done so, don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe, and also get a free course, Natural English Conversations, in the links in the description. Okay? You knew I was going to say in the links in the description, it was an inevitability. And to those listening on audio later, if you want to join live, Friday is when it happens. And you can find it probably on YouTube would be the best place. That's what I would recommend. Or Facebook, I guess. And if you would prefer to listen, then go ahead and listen on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever, right? You can find those links all in the description, and you can join the Discord as well. If you want to ask me questions, it's not even a word. If you want to ask me questions throughout the week, you can do so in the Discord as well. A lot of people message me privately to ask questions, but don't start with hi. Please do not start your message with just hi and then wait for me to respond. If you send hi to me and then you don't get a response from me, don't think, oh no, he's not responding. I don't respond to anybody who says hi. I only respond because I get like 1,000 hi's a day. That's an exaggeration, but a lot of people just say hi. And these days, you know, there are a lot of messages you don't want to respond to. So if you have a specific question, for example, in Discord, in the first message, you can say hi and then say the question. Hey, I was watching your live stream last week and I noticed blah, 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 and I'm wondering if blah, blah, blah. That's good. I'll probably answer you. Okay? Smith, can you hear that, Neo? It's the inevitability. Yeah, that sounds about right. I believe that's Agent Smith's line in the first. Or is that? I can't remember. Yeah, I think that is when he became the many Smiths, right? That's not my favorite thing. I'm not a big fan of the many Agent Smiths in the second and third Matrix movies. I think they went the wrong creative direction with that. They could have made Smith a very compelling villain who returned as a great villain, but instead they just made him this virus that turns people in the Matrix into more Smiths until he becomes everybody on the planet. I don't know. I didn't find it very, very compelling. Yeah, that's right. It was Matrix Reloaded. Do you hear that, Mr. Anderson? That's inevitability. Mr. Anderson, welcome back. We missed you. All right, I'm going to close the poll. Poll results are in. 45% say that Friday is not the weekend. Very clearly, 45% say that Friday is not the weekend. 32% say it is the weekend, and 22% of people say that Friday evening is the weekend. I am in the camp of the lowest group, which is 22%, started out as the largest one, that says the weekend starts on Friday. Or maybe it's not a good poll. I don't mean in that question that Friday is the only weekend. I mean, Friday evening, Saturday, Sunday is the weekend, right? The weekend starts at 5 p.m. on Friday, 4 p.m. Yeah. Anyway. Oops. We're going to be getting to another thing shortly. I want to talk a bit more about building a story. So we're going to hop over to the Black Bard. To come away is similar to come up. The thing with phrasal verbs is that they have multiple meanings, and so that's where it gets a little bit complex. To come away with is to have that as your takeaway, your insight, your impression after a particular experience. To come up with, if it's with, again, to come up by itself is different than come up with. To come up with is like create by yourself, to start from scratch, to build something from scratch, to think of an idea, to have an insight, right? I came up with this myself. All you, nobody else, right? So that's different. That's different. Luke inevitably got a son. That's right. A son named? I won't say it. I don't want to say it. I will say it's not one of those very normal names, like, and no shade to people named these things, but they're just common names. Bob, Steve, Bill, Ted, Frank, Mike, Dave, Tim. It's not one of those. Nothing wrong with those, but it's not one of those. The name will be a premiere, maybe. Yeah, maybe I should do that. Build up a little dramatic tension. Probably shouldn't do that. No one cares. My old English name was Sky Lollipop. I like that a lot. I wonder if it was a mistake to go from Ice Block Soda to Sky Lollipop, because I am a fan of Sky Lollipop. And while there's nothing wrong with being Ice Block Soda, Sky Lollipop is pretty dope. I like it. Sky is a cool name. Sky for a girl could be Skylar. I don't know if Skylar could be a boy's name, but Sky by itself could probably be a boy's name. And then Lollipop is cool. I think Lollipop is great. I would go for Lollipop as my son's middle name, maybe. Lollipop. That's cool. I like that. Something candy related. Asparagus. Well, it's not healthy, right? How about asparagus as the middle name? Dave Asparagus Pretty. How about that? All right. So we're going to get back to our broad theme of storytelling. And this time I want to talk more specifically about how we build a story, right? What it takes to craft a story kind of piece by piece, okay? So that's what we're going to talk about. Hold on, let me see if I... My buttons. Okay, there we go. Is that... Does that work? Does that work? Does that? That doesn't work. Okay. When you're telling a story, how do you start? What do you start with? What are the pieces? Well, we're going to go through a few elements of storytelling, and I'm going to give you a few English phrases specifically you can use when you're sharing those particular pieces, or when you're going through those particular pieces of a story. Now, these are not fixed, these are not set in stone, so this is going to be fairly general, okay? Get creative when you're telling stories. And think of things broadly as storytelling, whether you're explaining how to do something or why you care about something or giving a demonstration or making a proposal or talking through your work history. Think of all these things as storytelling, because then you're focused on the right thing, which is, how do I structure this so that it flows naturally, well organized, right? And people enjoy listening to it. No matter what you're talking about, if people don't enjoy listening to what you say, they will mentally check out, and that is not good. You don't want people to mentally check out when you're talking. So you want to keep them engaged. A good way is to start with a hook. Now, there are tons of different hooks. If you want to learn all about those, I have a presentations course, and we go through tons of different types of hooks. How do you start a presentation? It's a presentations course, right? Common ones start with a question. Have you ever wondered? So you get people thinking about something. Have you ever wondered what it would be like? Have you ever wondered what would happen if you just stop doing everything you're doing now and completely rethink your life? No, I haven't really wondered that. Maybe to put people in a headspace, or kind of like clickbait, but the good kind, to get people to pay attention, to pique their interest, to get them to think about what you're saying, right? What would it be like to? Then you propose a hypothetical to get the gears turning, which then leads into your story, which leads into your presentation. And again, I regard presenting and storytelling as essentially synonymous. They're the same thing in my view. Everything is a story. Well, not everything. A potato is not a story. Well, maybe a potato is a story. Potato is a story of a not potato becoming a potato. Potatoes are stories. There you go. Let me tell you about the time I realized that potatoes were stories. Now, if I said that as my hook, would it at least capture your attention? What? Potatoes are stories? What are you talking about? So sometimes making a sort of outrageous statement at the beginning can grab someone by the brain and get them to pay attention to what you're saying. So the hook, okay. But we want to, once we get into our story, kind of set the framework. If you're giving a presentation, you're talking about why this is an important topic, or saying when something happened, giving important background information. Let's say you're telling a story about the past. So there are many different phrases that you can use here, but simply stating, you know, in the summer of 1935, or back in the early 90s, if you're talking about your childhood, for example, or you're creating a fantasy story. So imagine, maybe it's not a fantasy, maybe it's your memory, but you're trying to put someone in a particular place. Imagine a valley with absolutely no plants, completely dry, like a desert. Okay, I can imagine that. So here, setting the scene is sort of building context visually in terms of time or important details. Again, if this is a presentation, then you might want to say, you know, after 6 months of trying to crack this problem, so far, nobody has been able to do it. Even Dave, who's great at solving all problems, can't do it. Right, Dave? That's right. So we've set the scene a little bit. Now, we're talking here about the type of story where we're focusing on the starting in the past or creating a visual, but I want to just emphasize that whether you're telling a story or giving a presentation, there's some similarities here, okay? So we've got the hook. We've set the scene. Now we want to set up some conflict. This is where we state the issue. You know, if you have a movie and no problems happen, generally it's going to be a very boring movie. Usually things are, this is the typical movie structure. In case you haven't noticed, I'm sure you have. Or TV show. Things are okay. And usually a TV show or movie, it doesn't start with the worst thing that's going to happen. It usually starts, typically, things are okay. Then, boom, something happens. There's a conflict, there's a problem, there's a disaster, whatever. So, hey, the picnic, la, 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 and then, boom, bad thing happens. Then, the rest of the story is about why we want to pay attention to this. These people are going to solve the problem. They're going to resolve the conflict. They're going to escape the disaster. They're going to rebuild their lives, whatever it is. That's why we like to watch movies. We like to see, if you think about it, it's the same thing over and over again. Things are fine, and then they're bad, and then they're fine. But the fine at the end is a different kind of fine, and we connect with that process. And that's why stories are powerful, and that's why we remember them. When you're stating the conflict, the problem, the difficulty, the struggle, the disaster, we might say things like, the real problem was, okay, now this is the thing that happened, okay? Then out of the blue, we heard a low rumble, okay? Out of the blue means suddenly. Everything changed when, right? Everything changed when a stranger moved into town. That would be the narration of the movie. These are just some basic phrases, and again, there are a billion more depending on the thing you're going to describe, but this sets up the transition from then talking about the solution to or describing the thing that you did to fix it, right? But we might continue going on describing the problem a little bit more, right? So we may say, as we get into it a little deeper, despite everything we tried, we couldn't figure out, right, why all the bees were attacking Dave. Dave, every time he goes outside, he gets swarmed by hundreds of bees and they all attack him. And we tried coating him in anti-bee spray, and we tried putting a plastic bag over him. No matter what we did, despite everything we tried, we couldn't figure out how to make the bees stop chasing Dave around. Or we're going through problem-solving approaches. We knew we had to. We knew we had to figure out a way to, all right? We tried everything to keep the bees off Dave, right? We tried everything to maybe, if going back to the proposal thing, we tried everything to solve this, including hiring 30 contractors, yet we were still not able to. And then what is the problem that you're trying to deal with? So this is getting a bit farther into it, and a couple of phrases that you can use there. Okay, but then we get to a very important point, which is we go through these difficulties to try to fix this, solve this, correct this, and now we want to have what's called in traditional storytelling the climax of the story, usually where things are the most exciting or the most interesting, which is when the hero of the story kills the dragon, solves the problem, when it's so close to it not happening, right? It could go either way, and that's the most exciting part. This bad thing happened, and then we struggled against it. And then, near the end of the story, we are at the most interesting point, the most important moment. This doesn't have to be a struggle. It depends on the story that you're telling, but it's a very important moment. In that moment, I realized that what truly matters is pizza or whatever truly matters, right? Then suddenly, anti-bee spray company swooped in with the perfect anti-bee spray. That's terrible. Don't use that example. But I'm just trying to get sort of the point across of things have been happening. Something goes wrong. And then we try, and then something very interesting happens, and then it's over, and hopefully that's a satisfying, complete journey, right? In an unexpected twist, Dave became a bee. He joined them, and that's what they wanted from the beginning. They were trying to recruit Dave and make him join their colony, and he became the queen bee in the hive. It was amazing. It was glorious to behold, right? So that's where we transition usually, right? Then we have the resolution. What is the thing that finally happens in the end? Finally, after all, you could put both of those together or you could use only one. And then we might reflect on that later. Looking back, you know, I think we really learned something that we'll never forget, right? We might reflect on the whole journey, right? The real lesson here that I want to share with you, again, for a proposal, for a presentation, the real lesson that I want to get across here, right? The experience taught me to accept that my assumption about how this is going to be resolved may not be correct. You know, maybe we assume that the bees are attacking because they're evil when really all they want is to recruit new bees. I gotta stop with this terrible analogy. But we might reflect on that with a few of these phrases, right? What I learned from this is, what did you learn? What's the takeaway? What's the story? What's the thing that you got from it? Okay. So these are just a few of the phrases that we can use in these stages of telling a story, where we go from the hook to setting the scene, to the challenge, getting deeper into the challenge and the struggle to make something happen, to the climax, and then what happened, and then reflecting on what happened. This is sort of this, in Joseph Campbell, it's called the monomyth, the hero with a thousand faces, this book about how basically almost every single story in mythology is the same story told again and again. And if you think about it, almost every single movie that you watch is the same story again and again, in, of course, different forms, different details, but it's the same kind of thing because our brains are programmed to get some kind of nourishment from these. And if we know how to tell stories and we know the phrases to communicate our ideas in a story-like way, then we can convince people, we can persuade people, we can do all kinds of things. So if you have any questions about any of these phrases, let me know. If you haven't already done so, don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe. And also check out my free course, Natural English Conversations, in the links in the description. Okay. You know, I think we might not get to our Duolingo English test. I might have to pick that up next week, unfortunately. Victor says, B, 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 B. And I agree completely. Retell a small story is a useful way to improve speaking skills. I agree with that completely. Yeah, retelling stories is a great way to improve. Clearness or clarity could be nice names to keep in mind, maybe. I think clarity is a cool name, a cool middle name. I like that. I do like that, yeah. I do like it. Okay. Well, I think we might call it a day today. Let's see. Check out the ChatGPT course. Thanks for the questions. From next week, I'm going to be doing a form where people can submit questions anytime. I'll put that in the description. Then I'll pick, I think, one or two really interesting questions for the week and go through that. What else? Yeah, hop in the Discord if you have questions there as well. And grab the course, like and subscribe, all of that. Anything else? I don't think so. Thank you so much for joining. It's been great. I hope you've learned something or a few things at least. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you have a fantastic weekend, which starts on Friday, according to the polls. Actually, no, it doesn't. 45%. No. Oh, unfortunate. Okay, never mind. Friday starts tomorrow. Thanks for watching and listening, and I will see you in the next one. Bye, everybody. Take care.